Hey, it's your old pal Slim welcoming you to a very special episode of The Letterbox Show. We've got Brian Duffield here to chat about his new movie, No One Will Save You, streaming on Hulu right now. Brian wrote and directed the movie about a young woman who's been alienated from her community as she finds herself in a face-off against a host of extraterrestrial beings who threaten her future while forcing her to deal with her past. If you're anything like me, that sounds like an enticing movie. There isn't any dialogue in this thing, and it's only 90 minutes long. In this conversation, Brian and I talk about his horror inspirations, the design of that gorgeous house, Caitlin's amazing performance, and how he uses his own Letterboxd account. Without further ado, here is that conversation. I'm not sure if you're aware, but maybe you're aware since I know you're a Letterboxd user, but since this movie dropped on Hulu, it's been one of the most watched movies on Letterboxd. Were you ready for that? Expecting that? Did you do anything to celebrate?
I wasn't as hopeful. I wasn't expecting it because I feel like a lot of streaming movies, you can't tell which ones are going to break out and which ones are going to just completely evaporate upon release.
Right.
So I was hopeful that we wouldn't evaporate, but then, yeah, when I saw it up on the top four for a while, I was very pleased. I was like, oh, they probably can't deplatform us.
I know. It was also like we do these top 10 countdown videos too on social like every week, and you probably saw that floating around in there too. It's probably a little bit surreal.
I know. I really don't care about that kind of stuff. Like I find it kind of unhealthy, but then I'll see it and then it's like, I get into it when I'm like number two, and I'm always like, I gotta get to number one, but it was Bottoms, which is so great.
Yeah.
But it was funny because like on like the scroll, whatever you call it, it would be like the Bottoms poster, which up on the top says from the producer of Cocaine Bear, which is me, but not me in that connection. And then Nowsy was second. And so I was like, well, I'll claim both.
Yeah. Just claim it. No one's going to come after you.
I mean, we both shot in New Orleans at the same time. And I remember I've never met her, but I would see Emma Seligman and Rachel at Whole Foods. And I was always like, should I introduce myself? But I'm just going to be this creepy, weird white guy. They're going to think I'm like hitting on them or something. And I'm like, no, I'm making a movie too. And then after I rapped, I was like, I am the producer of Cocaine Bear. Like that would have been a very easy intro.
Right. I'm not just some random bearded man coming to introduce myself. I might have a connection. I probably know the answer to this already based on what you said, but I usually ask filmmakers who are on Letterboxd if they do look at the reviews, because you are an avid user, like you're logging other movies. Do you just kind of like zip over? And I'm like, I'm going to continue looking up what I was looking up.
Yeah, I don't. I look up at the how many people have logged the movie. Like that's been really
more than The Exorcist so far, more than the new Exorcist.
That's been really fun and exciting. Cause again, like I had a show come out this year that, as hard as I tried, I felt like 10 people watched.
Was that the Skull Island show?
Yeah, like that was really, that was complicated for a couple of other reasons, but I was like, this is, you know, King Kong, big IP, good reviews. And it was like, could not break through. And so I didn't know what was going to happen with our weird silent alien movie. Mm-hmm. And especially, I'm not a fan of the like marketing starts like 10 days before the movie comes out. And so I was like, I don't know. And so when people seemed to be watching it, I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then seeing like the logs go up felt really good. Mm-hmm. And like how it very quickly lapped my last movie, which I was proud of. and then, but I don't read the reviews cause I find it really unhealthy. If it's negative, it really bothers me. And if it's positive, I think they're lying. Or the ones that really, I like if they're positive, but they're inaccurate about something in the movie, like that will really start like eating away at me. Like I think the Hollywood Reporter was like the first review of the movie that came out, which was great. And it was really positive, but it also spoiled almost the entire movie. Mm. Like I remember like the studio and my agents calling, like reading me the review, being like, isn't this great? And then it was like, spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. And it stressed me out so much because I was like, you don't even need to watch the movie now.
That sounds dreadful, having people recite reviews to you over the phone. I'd probably maybe just put the phone down and go in another room.
It's awful. And it was nice because I Kate, like, I was really nice to hear all the great stuff about Caitlin, because obviously she can't promote the movie right now. And again, I had no idea if people were going to like the movie or hate the movie. So it was nice to, things were like leaning positive, but I find it awful. Completely unhelpful.
when I first heard of the movie, we have a Letterboxd Slack where all the crew members chat, and someone dropped the trailer for it, and I was like in awe immediately. So I grew up a huge fan of Signs, and I had Signs in theaters, and I remember that being one of my favorite like movie going experiences.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Seeing that, and the trailer, obviously, I was like, man, there's a lot of, it was like the Boss Baby tweet. I was like, I'm getting a lot of Signs vibes from this trailer here. So I added it to my watch list, and I'm curious with you, is Signs one of those movies? What are some other movies that maybe like resonated with you in the past?
Signs was a huge one for me. I love Signs. And I, you know, as a fellow Philly kid, you know, at that perfect age when Shyamalan was ascending, you know, I was early teens, I think, when Sixth Sense hit. And then like, he was just doing everything I wanted to do and so well and so young. And so I was, and am, obsessed with Shyamalan. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I think a lot of this movie, and this is not a critique of Signs at all, but a lot of what I would say, like in pitching the movie was, you know, these aliens have traveled so far to get here. And then in most movies, not just Signs, there's a lot of like bopping around in the fields and kind of scoping it out. And like Signs is great because it makes it a plot point that they're the scouts, you know, or whatever. And there was a part of me that was just like, they traveled all this way. They're so much better than us. I don't think they care about privacy and like decorum of that. Like, what happens if that alien and Signs that he sees on the roof just walk into the house in that moment? Because again, so much farther advanced. And why would he care? Like, what's the purpose of beyond, again, Signs makes the plot point, but I think even back in like 2002, I was always being like, that would be really cool. And then that was always a scary thing. And then I think as soon as I started like living by myself and then having a family, you're kind of like, there's always that funny games fear, but that's such a miserable experience. But I was like, it's more fun if it's an alien.
Yes. You know, speaking of like Philly kid stuff, one of my best friends, his uncle, that was their farm.
Oh, that they that's filmed awesome.
So he has like, he had a photo with Mel on his like kitchen, like just them like right before filming. So little strange nugget.
There's like a really, I won't say it because as soon as my assistant said it, I was like, oh God, that's so true. But there's like a really direct connection to Signs that I didn't think of until we were on set. And I keep waiting for someone to be like, oh, this movie is just this from Signs. And so every day I'm like, someone eventually is going to tweet at me like, this is what you did. And I'm going to be like, that's exactly what I did. But it was all subconscious because I don't think about what I do.
Right. Until someone points it out to you on social media.
It's terrible.
So how difficult was it to make that trailer? You know, like, because if most people have seen the movie by now that are probably listening to this and they know, you know, what's going on. But what was that experience like?
Trailer was actually pretty fast. Like there was a couple. We had definitely had notes, but I remember dreading seeing the trailer just because it was like, how do you do it? And then when we saw the trailer, we were all kind of like, okay, like that's going to work. And so like the marketing company came up with the home invasion tagline kind of thing, which I think is fine. But I was like, that really does help tee up the movie. And I think my big notes were, well, there's one, I think the very first trailer, it was very late in the trailer where you started to go aliens. like they didn't have the shot of the alien on the steps or opening the door. And then towards the end, you started seeing things that you were like, that's probably aliens. But that was one of the notes where it was like, can we explain why this home invasion is different? And then ending with the Daddy Long Legs chase was something I really pushed for. I love the trailer because you probably wouldn't think that it's dialogue free based on watching it, but then also it really doesn't prepare you for the movie. It's cool, but it's like you know, most of that trailer is like the first 15 minutes of the movie, but doesn't set that up for you. And it was funny, like when the trailer came out, like there was a bunch of bitching about like how it gives so much away. And we were just kind of like,
it was like 8 minutes, like 5-8 minutes into the movie, the alien appears. I remember I watched it with my wife and we were, I think like maybe 30 or 40 minutes. And I was like, I don't think she said anything in this movie yet. And then I was like, you know, why would she? Like, she's by herself. Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's not that impressive.
Right. The we're talking about the aliens and bad Letterboxd reviews, but one of my favorite ones, Alex left a review. I would have kicked that little freak like a fucking field goal. I'll tell you that for free. The small alien. that scene was tense, but yeah, the daddy long legs design is so badass. I love design of the gray, like the grays. I've heard you talk about the grays. And usually if anyone mentions like the phrase the grays, they like aliens or they know a little bit about aliens. Are you one of those people? Like, did you grow up like fascinated with the like sci-fi stuff and intrigue about aliens and all that stuff?
Oh yeah. Hardcore. Loved. Always loved aliens and sci-fi. E.T. was like, I think the first alien awareness I had. Mm-hmm. And E.T. and Star Trek. And Star Trek is so different in terms of it's not really, you're not. That feels like more like a fantasy that like, oh, my great grandkids might be able to look Star Trek. But E.T. was like seminal. At some point I started realizing aliens could be bad. When I was like young, I remember it was probably the combo of the X-Files starting and the Fire in the Sky poster.
Oh my God, dude. Fire in the Sky warped me when I saw that as a kid.
And the poster's great because I remember I only saw the poster and it has like the classic poster stuff where it's like, on November 5th, this man was abducted kind of thing. And November 5th is my birthday. Whoa. And I remember being, I think that was 93. And so I was like 7 and being like, aliens took him on my birthday. And like making it so much more specifically scary to me that it was on my birthday. Because when you're a kid, like your birthday is like a holy day. The violation of that was so scary. And then, yeah, I got really into aliens. Any alien, anything. To this day, I'll watch if there's an alien in it.
Contact was one of my earlier... I think Contact was like one of my first DVD purchases.
Yeah.
And that one, I still love Contact. Like, what a beautiful movie about how... I mean, that's a good end. Good connection with aliens, potentially. Really, when you consider Fire in the Sky.
Yeah. I was just talking to someone about it, too, because I think that's maybe the only movie that really deals with aliens and religion. Because I've talked a lot about like, why would the government hide this? And I think A, like the markets would all go nuts. And then B, like it really would be like a huge reset button for a lot of religions. And I love Contact because I think it's one of the only, at least I can't think of another one that deals specifically with what happens if this happens with faith. Like science tackles that in a very personal way, but like there's nothing about his, I think he's Episcopalian in science, but there's nothing about his faith that's connected to the aliens. Whereas like Contact is so heavily, like all that McConaughey stuff is so great where he's, you know, thinks they should send a believer to...
And then Tom Skerritt plays right into their hands. Remember, he's like always talking about God and faith and he gets picked like right away.
Yeah, it's great. But it's like, but like, you're like, oh yeah, that would be such a nightmare today. Like it would really be like it's got to, you know, there would be the MAGAs, there would be... It would be the end times.
It would be the end times for our society probably if it actually happened.
Yeah.
The house is featured a lot in that trailer that I talked about and the house is gorgeous. The details in the house, it looks like you can feel the kind of decades of life in that house. That was Ramsey Avery, the production designer?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's probably one of my favorite parts of the entire movie is that dang house.
Good. Yeah, I mean, Ramsey and I talked a lot about the house as a main character. Which I think is how you trick someone like Ramsey, who he was coming off of Rings of Power, to do a small movie like this. It was so great to get to work with him and Caitlin too, where, you know, you're building a lot of backstory visually through this house. And it's been really cool. Like, I do think the lack of dialogue has made people pay attention to the house in a more specific way. And really have pick up a lot of what Ramsey was doing there. in a way that it's not like a lot of inserts or like big show off kind of things. It's just all there. And I think it's online, but in the ADG's magazine, the I think it's called Perspective, he wrote like a really great article about the house. And I remember like presenting the studio with everything. And like Ramsey just launched into like, this is what was happening to the house 100 years ago. And then they moved the whole house. And like just that level of detail and specificity was great, because that's also partially why Bryn is fighting so hard, is that it's her home. It's her only safe place. And I think Ramsey making that bubble so beautiful, where you're like, yeah, this girl probably expects to live out her entire life in this space. And so I was trying to make it as pretty and her as possible. It was really great to just have a production designer that was kind of a lead actor.
She could make bank Airbnb-ing that place. Get a little camper on the side of her lawn, rent that out.
Yeah. I think the townsfolk would hate it, but yeah.
That's true. There's some reviews for Caitlin. Corey left a review. Let's all welcome Caitlin to the list of scream queens. And Emma left one. Came for Caitlin Dever and was not disappointed. She carries this dialogue-free thriller with ease and holds your attention as a performer without the need for words. Was she all in when it came to like finding out about this movie? I know she's a producer with a no dialogue, and she probably ate this up as an actor, right?
Yeah, she did. It's funny, like the no dialogue thing wasn't the main thing we talked about. I think like the physical challenge was the main thing. I think the no dialogue thing, she was just kind of like, yeah, like
time to flex.
She's got this faith. Like she'll figure, like, I don't think she was, I mean, maybe she was, she's an amazing actor, so maybe she tricked me. but she did not seem stressed about that at all. And then when you're shooting it, it's so funny because it's not, you know, you're going shot to shot. And a lot of times when you're shooting shot to shot, you don't have dialogue. Especially during like set pieces and action. And so like filming it, we'd never really thought about the no dialogue thing either. But then I think she was really excited about like the physical challenge, because it was very physically demanding, and she got to go on wires and got to do all this, you know, crazy stuff that I don't think she had had the opportunity to do before. And I think building out a character through physical action was something that, yeah, I think it's for actors like Caitlin, it's real catnip. Like it's just like, it's so fun and challenging for them, but like in a way that, you know, that's she's not an actor that wants to coast. Like she wants to
grind out there.
she wants to grow and yeah, I'm so stoked that everyone got to see what I saw every day, which you're just like, oh, she's insanely talented and makes it so easy. I remember when I cast her, I was like, well, that's like 60% of the job done. Like it really is. Like hopefully everything else can get up to her level, but. I was like, as long as she's not difficult, like this will be a breeze. And then she's so easy to work with and such a joy, and the crew love her. And so you're like, this is 80% of the job, really. But yeah, so, and she's a real producer on, like she produced this movie. So it was just great to have that partner. And I think most actors should be producers in general, but it was really great having her the whole process and be invested and have a lot of opinions and thoughts and ideas that made it into the movie and into the cut. Yeah.
Two quick reviews I'll read. One that gives you props, so hopefully you enjoy it. Cinema Joe left a review. I feel like I've been foaming at the mouth for Hollywood to give us some good old-fashioned alien invasion stories, and Duffield delivers. Give the guy whatever he wants. End quote.
I want a nap.
Clara also left a review. Grief as a suspension in time. That final moment together, stuck, cemented in place forever and always. All we can do is stare at it as it stares back, a frozen, unbreakable memento of the things we did to those we love. And that's probably my favorite part of the movie, is that through line where you're kind of not sure what happened in Bryn's past, you know, that leads to it. Another thread, obviously, that I love from Signs, you know, any of those emotional moments where I can just let loose and all the tears come out. But what came first? Did the backstory, was that the keystone of the movie for you? Did that like keep things together, that this is what's going to hold the glue of this kind of invasion, alien, everything together, is that moment towards the end?
Not that moment specifically, but Brynn as a character and her backstory specifically, I had before there were aliens and was kind of trying to figure out what to do with it for a while. And I don't love miserable movies. I mean, I do, but I don't want to make them. And I was like, this is like, how do you tell this character in this story in a way that doesn't feel like a bummer? Or just like, you're just kind of wallowing, like you're kind of Oscar baiting a little bit, which is great for some people. And I just thought for me, like, it's not what I wanted. Cause I think I had been really struck by a couple similar real life cases of like really young girls that were kind of going through what Brynn went through. And then you're like, they at some point are going to be in their 20s and in their 30s and they have their whole lives ahead of them. And that's like, what does that life look like? Mm. And that was really interesting to me. I think then at some point the alien idea kind of started grafting onto it. And then I started really liking that because I liked this idea of like the bubble that she's built kind of gets destroyed. And then I also liked the idea of, oh, I can tell a lot of this backstory, not through Brynn talking to a therapist, but by the aliens being curious and kind of putting pieces together, like with the audience, like in a weird way. That felt like a really unique challenge, like something. And I really liked the idea that there, I hadn't seen, you know, something we've talked about was that the, when the world ends, it ends for everybody, including people that are in Brynn's shoes. And that was like, oh, let's put the least likely lead character in a Independence Day and see what happens. And it felt, I don't know, I said earlier, like, I don't know why I do the things I do, but sometimes it just tastes right. And I just keep going down that path. And then like 5 years later, someone tells me why I did it. And I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
There were some two quick alien related reviews that I wanted to read from Art. What if when they arrive, we learn aliens have hair? Distinct and variable faces and slow metabolisms, we wouldn't accept that. And J-Well left a review. Finally, someone made a sequel to the McPherson tape.
Yeah.
Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, I love them. The only movie I watched in prep for this, the only alien movie I watched in prep for this that I hadn't seen before, because someone told me, I was like, yeah, it's about aliens just walking to the front door. And someone was like, oh, like the McPherson tapes. And I was like, oh, shit. And then it's at the very last scene of that movie is that's what happens. But it's so cool.
It's like the first found footage. Isn't that like regarded as like one of, if not the first found footage movies?
Yeah, it's really cool. Like it definitely got absorbed into the Blair Witch black hole. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's probably like a $5 movie, but I really like that movie. I think it's really cool. And that ending is, as cheap as it is genuinely unsettling and cool. So that's that comment's great. And then, yeah, we tried putting hair on them.
Really?
Well, it was like, I think there was like a little bit of hesitation from the studio where it's like, are you really sure you want to do grays? Cause that's like the emoji. And I was like, I always was like, absolutely wanted to do grays, but we were like, let's see what else we can do to make them stand out and cool. And we tried everything from like clothes to like body modifications to hair to just weird. They have tattoos that you can kind of see in the movie. But it's not like super front and center. And it was just funny like how quickly a gray would look like it belonged in Star Trek. And then you take all that stuff away and they're like, oh, that looks like they belong in this movie.
Right.
So there's not like, it's not like they have like emo hair, but we were trying to figure out what is the, what can we do with these guys?
I was scanning your Letterboxd account to see what you've been watching. And I saw that you just watched William Friedkin's last movie, The Caine Mutiny Court Martial. How was that?
I thought it was great. I thought it was, like it takes you, it took me like a second to, cause it's so, this is going to sound like a critique, but it's not meant to be. It's so not cinematic. Like it really is very like, here's the actors go, in a way that reminded me of like when they used to do like live dramas on TV, like there's something very like live about it. And then also there's something, and again, this is a compliment. There's some, like, I think you could rip that audio and it would be a really compelling podcast. But once I got into the rhythm of it, like a 1 or 2 minutes in, I thought it was really great. I don't know if Kiefer Sutherland's ever been better.
Wow.
I don't know. I just was like, this is great. Like, I'm so excited that someone gave him a couple of weeks to just go make something cool and good. And then, like, it ends great. And I've been thinking about that last shot and what happens on the last shot ever since I saw it, because it's such, like, a great encapsulation of his whole career. And just, like, the fact that his career gets to end on that moment, I think is really delightful. And I'm sure he would have loved to have made more movies after it. But I'm like, that's a really, I think he would have been really tickled that was, like, the last thing he did on film. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I added it to my watch list. I didn't realize it's streaming on Paramount Plus. I do have that. So I think I need to fire it up.
I know. It's the, like, worst. It's just like, it's like,
there's like 30 streaming apps now with it. And this it's like and Showtime included.
Like, it's like, talk about, like, again, like, I love Letterboxd and I don't know how accurate it is, but I generally will see, will judge how a movie is streaming based on its logs on Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. And then when it's like a Paramount Plus thing, it's like, I think the freaking thing when I watched it on Sunday was like one, like maybe 1,000 or maybe less.
It's at 2,000 now as of recording. So it's slowly rising. Yeah.
Like, you're like, guys, this is one of the greats. Like, we gotta do better than this.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to my buddies. We had watched, for other podcasts, Cold War, which is that, you know, black and white Polish movie that was nominated. And we were just kind of like talking about, you know, the studios. And I'm like grateful that so many good things are available on so many like available, like streaming apps that you can just watch it wherever. But I just wish there was also that like different kind of marketing component. And then, like, maybe a guaranteed physical release, you know, by X date. There's still, like, you know, we're still so new, I guess, technically so new into it. But I just wish, like, there was more oomph behind the marketing to, like, get the word out about the Kane Mutiny Court Martial. It's William freaking Friedkin, you know?
I know. And I think my hunch is that because of the SAG strike, they really couldn't, right? Because it's Paramount, so there's no way they would have gotten an interim agreement. True. And so you don't get Kiefer or Lacey out there, or Jason Clark, who's so great in it, like out there talking about it. But it also feels like, you know, I think TCM was like one of the few places that would be like, I do want to see like a 10-minute introduction by a critic talking about why a movie is important. And like, I do wish there was like, you could do cool, I think this is true of every streamer, like you could do cool things to make it feel like an experience and make it feel important. Like, you could totally have had, I don't know if Spielberg's the guy, but you could have him be like, this is the last movie of William Friedkin's career, and this is what he's given us. And also, The Exorcist has a movie out today, the same day, which is crazy. Like, there's ways to make it that this is like an important movie. In like, it might not be the best movie of the year, but like, I think it's that movie is like a really important movie. And I think is a real great distillation of a lot of the things he was interested in. And the fact that it's like, I have to go onto this stupid app and search for it and not find it. And then like the title, it takes you a while to remember the actual title. And at least in my case, because I have a bad memory, somehow the third thing that comes up under Kane, and you're just like, it just came out. Like, this is, I don't know.
Paramount, if you're listening, you know, Brian's available. You know, we can get people, we can get anyone we need to introduce this movie.
I will stump. Yeah. I feel like the whole film community should. Like, it's like, also, like, I saw Friedkin talk a couple times, and just like the most entertaining person to ever speak, I think. So like him and like Bob Evans, but like, it was like such a treat. And just, I feel like you could, I don't know, like, it just seems like such a missed opportunity. And like, I don't know if he did any press beforehand or what, but, you know, it feels like we treat like Scorsese right and Spielberg right, and that's kind of it.
That's it. Yeah. We have a lot of soul searching to do. for yeah, for the I just next think
it's,
great and
I think it's like where you get into like lost into the content wars where it is just like it's like this like here it is kind of thing, as opposed to like we can talk like even if it even beyond you know that, like I remember like when Cocaine Bear came out, like there's, and again that's a very buzzy thing in general, but like there was like the true story documentary of Cocaine Bear, like there was so much around it, which was fun and great, but it was also like, yeah, like this is a fun, this is how you should talk about, like it's not just like barfed out, here it is,
right,
idiots, kind of like it's like, oh yeah, let's give context, like if you like the movie, like you can dive deeper into it, or you can learn more about it, and it feels like I, you know, you and I grew up, it sounds like, in the golden age of like the Lord of the Rings extended editions.
Yes.
Film, like every DVD was like a film school. Yeah.
Great packaging. You go to Best Buy every Tuesday to see what the new releases are. And like, I remember the DVD boom, everything was coming out.
I would buy movies I didn't like.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, oh, there's commentary and making ofs. And then I'd be like, oh, I like that movie a lot more.
Commentary, audio commentary is such a lost art. It's like gone. History. Now is a good time. Like, it, listen, if there's ever a physical release for No One Will Save You, they don't ask you to do a commentary. Letterboxd will happily put together an audio commentary.
I'll do it. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to ever watch the movie again, but I could probably do a commentary.
We'll just record for 93 minutes and hopefully it lines up story wise.
I could probably do it without watching it. I think I'd get really
the
close.
First ever audio commentary not connected to watching the movie.
There's a part of me that wants to try it because I think I would get really, because I've seen it so many times.
You've logged it a lot. Remember you were doing like final passes?
That was every time I saw it, sat down start to finish. So that's not including all the times I saw 30 minute chunks or more. Like that was like I sat down, watched the whole thing, and I guess it was 17. And I think Quentin has said you should watch it 4 times. And I was like, it's great for you, man. Like,
so but, I, you know, all that to say, you know, we're talking about streaming and DVDs. I mean, hopefully with this amount of logs, the same thing happened with Prey eventually.
Yeah.
Like that got a release, but fingers crossed we can get a pretty banger physical release for this.
I love it. Yeah, I love it, obviously. And then, yeah, I think, you know, it seems like it's trending in that direction. I don't know if Prey was ever part of something else, because I assume at some point they're going to package that with the other Predator movies. Mm. But I would love it. Like, I know the Marvel shows are starting to do physical releases.
Right, WandaVision and all that came stuff. Out, yeah. I think.
So I love it. Because also, I think, like, the deplatforming was so scary, like, after Batgirl. And, like, I know, like, you have, like, your piracy and all that kind of stuff. But it also just feels like, yeah, you want there to be a physical... Like, I think at Beyond Fest, Del Toro was saying, like, he doesn't believe a movie's getting made until he holds the Blu-ray. And I feel very similar. But then it's also like some of these things, there's no expected Blu-ray. And so you're just kind of like, it feels like it's done, but there's definitely like this like little dangling thread where you're like, it's not really, it doesn't really exist yet.
Well, I'll believe it when I walk into Best Buy Tuesday morning and I get a copy of No One Will Save You. That'll be the sign.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to The Letterboxd Show. Our guest today was Brian Duffield, and No One Will Save You is streaming now on Hulu in the US. And don't forget, you can follow Brian on Letterboxd too. That link is in the episode notes. Maybe consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, as it helps spread the word about the show. Thanks to our crew, editorial producer Brian Formo, our booker Sophie Shin, Sam for the art, and once again to you for listening. And thanks to Joe Trapanese for making a beautiful score for No One Will Save You. The Letterboxd Show is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.